I'm Vermont Edition co-host Bob Kinzel. Just wanted to let you know that this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. And as we do every year, we have set up at the Vermont State House for opening day of the legislative session. We love being tucked into the Cedar Creek Room here as we are today and tomorrow because it's one of the main thoroughfares between the House and Senate chambers and the all-important cafeteria. On the first day of the biennium, this place is buzzing at this hour, full of old and new lawmakers, friends, family members, students, journalists, and curious onlookers. You may be able to hear the curious absence of that hubbub today, although we have had a tour group of people touring the State House, finding out all about this wonderful building moving through. But it's the second half of the two-year legislative term, and the House and Senate, both gaveled to order in the 10 o'clock hour, were adjourned by 11. In her opening remarks, House Speaker Mitzi Johnson vowed that the incivility in Washington won't bleed into Vermont politics on her watch, and she implored representatives to get to know one another, colleagues of different political views, different ages, and from different regions in the state. Over in the Senate, President Pro Tem Tim Ash was singing a similar tune.
There are things we can't control, but there are also things we can control, and as I pulled into the parking lot today, I thought the one thing we can control is how we conduct our business. And at a time when the news around the country and around the world is quite troubling, people have come to have deep skepticism that elected officials can behave in a civil and appropriate way. I think they are desperate to see people conduct themselves civilly in political life, and that's the way we've conducted ourselves here. So each day while we face all of the unexpected things that pop up to make our work here more difficult, the one thing we can control is at the end of the day feeling that we've conducted ourselves in a way that the voters of the state would be proud of. So.
And we're actually going to hear from Tim Ash and Mitzi Johnson on tomorrow's show. But today we're going to spend the hour hearing from other lawmakers and from the people who make their work possible. Over the winter break, we sent an email to all 180 lawmakers asking them to tell us what they're looking forward to working on this year, maybe what was held over from last year that they want to get right to work on, or what their new priorities are in this second half of the biennium. We got more than 20 responses, and we're going to sprinkle them all in over the course of today and tomorrow's show. And let's start with Representative Zachariah Ralph. Representative Ralph works for the towns of Heartland, Windsor, and West Windsor. His community is working on what to do with the now-closed Windsor prison property. But there's another issue he wants to focus on, too.
Last session, for the first half of the legislative biennium, we struggled to pass strong action to address the climate emergency, which is why for the upcoming session, I will work hardest to pass legislation to create a stronger and more resilient environment here in Vermont. I will support things such as the Transportation Climate Initiative, as well as the Global Warming Solutions Act and the Vermont Green New Deal. The communities I represent are challenged by what meaningful actions individuals in our state can take in recognizing and addressing the climate emergencies. Our communities are challenged not only by the real and scary reality of a climate change future, but also how we can respond to things that are already taking place, such as increased flooding and the disturbances to our ecosystem from the arrival of invasive pests and pathogens, such as the emerald ash borer. I will work hard to address these issues in the upcoming session.
In another viewpoint, Mark Higley, he represents the towns of Lowell, Jay, Westfield, Troy, and Eden in the House. And like many lawmakers who sent us thoughts, Representative Higley is ready to debate climate change legislation. But he'll vote against legislation that includes new taxes or fees.
I believe with all the challenges for residents in my towns around affordability, such as property taxes, transportation and heating costs, vehicle inspections, fuel prices, school and municipal budget increases, I don't believe my constituents are looking for more mandates to be imposed upon them from Montpelier. I now serve on the Energy and Technology Committee and understand there are a number of climate change initiatives being proposed, like the Transportation Climate Initiative, Global Warming Solutions Act, and maybe even a Vermont Green New Deal, all of which I believe will have a devastating effect on the rural community. My biggest concern is the rhetoric around climate change that has our youth believing the world will come to an end in 10 years. So while debating these initiatives, I implore my colleagues to tone down the rhetoric so a rational dialogue may ensue.
We're going to hear more from lawmakers on their views about climate change legislation and other issues throughout the hour. But first, let's turn to David Sheets. David is the Vermont State Curator, and he's actually held that job since it was created in 1987. He's coordinated multiple state house restoration projects through his decades on the job. He, in fact, oversaw a big mold remediation project over the past year. David, nice to talk with you, as always.
Indeed.
So right now, as we're having this conversation, another tour group is moving through the state house. They're learning about the Cedar Creek Room, where we are, which has this enormous battle scene painting on the wall, and they're finding out all these great facts about the State House. Meanwhile, the work of the State House is going on. So how do you run this building as both a museum and an office?
Well, when I meet with legislators and they're newly elected to those posts, I immediately inform them that they are the living, breathing, live exhibits of the State House. And frankly, our biggest audience, Jane, during this part of the year, during the legislative session, are schools. Almost every school in Vermont visits the State House within a two-year period. We are by far the most heavily visited school site in Vermont. And the curriculum here? Civics. And civics has never been more important as a subject in our nation than it is right now. So we are beefing that up big time. It's about the building. It's a glorious building. I would be the first to suggest that.
It would be a scoop if you said otherwise right now.
But I also think that what's going on in the building, which begins today, is worth witnessing. And it's worth witnessing no matter what your age, but the State House year-round happily has a tourist season and a legislative season, not at the same time, thank God.
Although it looks like it today.
Yeah. Today, yes, but not at the same time most of the time. And the challenge of making sure the State House is appreciated for all kinds of purposes has long been my work, and working very much with the legislators who enjoy nothing more than hosting a school from their district and showing them the ropes, showing them what representing the interests of their constituents in this building is all about, and how wonderfully blessed we are in Vermont to have a building of this scale. And with government still very easy to touch, easy to understand, I think in other parts of the country, it's much more challenging to do that kind of work, especially on site in the actual place where it's going on.
Yeah, if you can even get in at all in some cases, it's sort of closed off. I'm going to wager, David, that, and I would never speak ill of a lawmaker, but that school groups, just by virtue of coming into this impressive building, are at least as respectful of the building as the lawmakers are who work here every day.
They are. And I think actually that was a big part of the restoration of the building over the decades that I've been here, was to bring the building back to the sense of grandeur that it once had, didn't have at the time, but now happily has again. And it's wonderful to see the sense of awe that the building inspires, and it does make people behave themselves, at least for the first few days.
I just want to ask you briefly before we move on, is this building free of mold?
It is.
It's like $500,000 restoration
Well,
project?
Yes, and that was actually last summer, not this summer. Mm-hmm. We're struggling with humidity. And we're climate change. And I will say that we're very much hoping to put in a new HVAC system that will hopefully address the humidity that is wildly fluctuating in this building throughout the year, always has. It's getting worse, partly because the State House is more energy efficient now.
Right, you're not talking about just, you know, hot air from lawmakers
here, David. No, it's trapping the moisture, unfortunately, because we're now more energy efficient. So it's a double-edged sword that we need to deal with in the future.
Well, we're going to have you back, I'm sure, to talk about that. And I appreciate you being here just a little bit to talk about both the grandeur and the nitty-gritty of working and running the State House.
Journalism is the other important thing that we have to have in this building, holding everyone to account. And that's the great work that you and VPR do.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for that.
Thank you. That's David Sheets, Vermont State Curator. Always a pleasure to have him on the show. Let's hear from a couple more lawmakers on what they see as priorities this year. Chittenden County Senator Ginny Lyons chairs the Health and Welfare Committee, and her priorities are focused around her committee's work.
Reducing costs for prescription drugs and increasing workforce development and a number of other areas in health care. In workforce, of course, we're going to be looking at some of the programs that we initiated last year, not just in health care, but also in child care, and looking to see which ones of those work are most effective, and then perhaps make some changes to encourage greater opportunities for people in the world of health care. Part of that is looking at mental health. The mental health system has been really burdened recently as a result of the opioid epidemic and some other needs that we have for facilities. So we will be evaluating system changes to our mental health care programs and hoping that we can better serve people who have mental illnesses. There is one issue that I am very much interested in, and I hope that we can get to it in our committee, and that is the ever-decreasing number of first responders and volunteer fire folks, firefighters in our state. This is a national problem, but we see it in Vermont, that there are not enough people who are working in our communities as volunteers for responding to disasters or to needs that people have in their homes. So I'm looking forward to understanding what we might be able to do to increase that volunteer group of people in our communities and get more folks out to help out as volunteer firefighters or first responders.
Chittenden County Senator Ginny Lyons there. And let's turn to a lawmaker who's here in front of me right now. Representative Nader Hashim lives in Dummerston and represents the Windham 4 District. We spoke with him last year on the first day of the session when he became the first active state trooper to serve in the legislature. And I am pleased to have you back again this year. Welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
But I understand you're no longer an active state trooper. Why not?
Correct. So, I mean, as you can imagine, it was a pretty complicated process, you know, both it was a unique situation as well, and both the Vermont State Police and myself were trying to figure it out and make sure everything is done by the book and by the rules. And as time moved on and the pieces came together, it just became pretty apparent that it makes the most sense for me to not be in law enforcement anymore, unfortunately. I mean, I missed the job significantly, especially a lot of the people who I worked with, but, you know, this is the best and more logical path forward.
You say it was a joint decision, but you applied for a waiver, right, so that you could live in the community that you served and police that community, and I think you weren't granted that waiver, right? So did it not quite feel like a joint decision?
I mean, it was complicated, to say the least. I figured I should at least try, see what happens. You know, waivers have been granted in the past, and it wasn't granted. I can see their reasoning behind it.
You don't think it was a political reason?
I don't think it would be at all, no.
So what are you focused on this year? When we talked with you last year, you had a number of issues that you were really interested in working on, including things like whether or not we should ban private prisons in the state and working on issues to address poverty and to sort of help people who are in poverty not face overdue financial burdens. Are those still things that you're working on in this second year?
Yes, those will always be priorities for me. Entering this job as a legislator, you know, one of my big priorities is equity and fairness in our judicial system. And, you know, that's something that I'm continuing to work on as well. I mean, I think that there's also many other aspects of government that we have to pay attention to, especially on the Judiciary Committee. And, you know, some of the other topics that I'll be looking at after hearing continuously from my constituents is climate change. There's also the $15 an hour minimum wage, paid family leave.
Do you support paid family leave and the
yes.
$15 minimum
yes,
wage?
Yes, I do. And also, I've been hearing a lot about commercializing marijuana, and I really hope that's something that moves forward in this session. I've heard from a lot of younger folks around my age range. I mean, I'm 31 now. People would move here and visit here if cannabis was commercialized. So.
Do you see a roadside test for sobriety, cannabis sobriety, as an impediment to moving forward as the governor does with a tax and regulate retail system?
I think that if there was a saliva test attached to the bill, it wouldn't make it out of the House.
It would not. If there was one attached to the bill, you think it would not make it out of the House?
I think there are a number of people who would not support it because of the saliva testing, if it were attached.
Are you as eager this year as you start the second year of the biennium as you felt last year?
I'm definitely eager, yes. The sense of wanderlust is a bit decreased because I know somewhat what to expect. Mm-hmm. We're all also trying to get back into, you know, switching gears to get into the mode of absorbing information from all these different sectors of government. So it's exciting. Yes.
Well, I'm really glad that you took the time to join us again today. Thank you very much, Representative Nader Hashim. Thank you.
Thanks.
And as we talk to lawmakers here, let's hear from Lamoille, Washington Representative Dave Iacovone, who's looking at his constituents as he shapes his priorities.
People in my community are struggling. Nearly one-third of the people in my town had to visit the local food shelf last year. Whether it's the cost of winter tires, paying for the next fuel delivery, or recovering from the cost of Christmas, many young and old alike are hurting. Thousands of Vermonters are just one car repair or hospital bill away from being underwater. We need an agenda for change that helps to strengthen families, and it will not be achieved by giving up to $10,000 for people to relocate to Vermont. It's been said before that if you always do what you always did, you will always get what you always got. We need to do more than just say over and over again that things are too expensive, expecting them to change. We need a plan to invest in Vermonters so we have hope for the future.
Representative Becca White serves the town of Hartford in Windsor County. Here's what she sent us about her priorities this year.
What I will be working hardest to accomplish this session that I feel wasn't accomplished in the previous half of the session is pushing to respond to climate change in our state. I serve on the Transportation Committee, and we have the unique ability to tackle our largest greenhouse gas emitting sector, which is transportation in Vermont. It accounts for 43% as of my last look of our greenhouse gas emissions. There's some legislation as well as some administration work that can be done to have us be a part of something called the Transportation Climate Initiative, TCI. In brief, it is a cap and trade style system with a regional approach to reducing our greenhouse gas emissions in the transportation sector.
So, Representative Becca White, one of the people who our next guest will have to get to know by sight if he's supposed to deliver messages to her on the fly. Sitting in front of me now here in the Cedar Creek Room is Charles Jenning, an eighth grader from Stowe who goes by the name Chip, and he attends the Bishop John Marshall Catholic School in Morrisville, except not for the next 6 weeks because he's here as part of the PAGE program. He's one of about 100 kids who applied to be a legislative PAGE. 30 were chosen, Chip's among them, and he's here to talk with us now. Thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
So this is day one for you, right? And what do you think so far?
It's fun. I like it. Yeah.
So what I noticed when I was observing the House this morning in the House chamber was the pages who were sitting in the middle of all the action, furiously thumbing through the pages of like what we would old school Facebook page, the kind of thing that you have when, at least when I was in high school, that would say, here are all the people you're going to high school with. First of all, how can I get one of those? Because I want a book that I can see all of the pictures. But is that what you're trying to do now, memorize people's faces so you know?
Yeah, we have to memorize them after a certain period of time. And then, yeah.
How far along do you think you are now?
I don't know all of them, but I kind of like, I don't memorize them like in order. I just like, it's easier when you meet them to memorize them.
And you think you have quite a few of them already?
Mm-hmm.
How do you do that?
It just happens. I don't know.
So what made you want to be a page? Because this is a prestigious job, but it's also a tough job, and it takes you away from the joys of school for 6 weeks.
So my sister's friend did it, and then I saw her doing it, and I wanted to do it because I really like government politics and stuff. So then I applied, and I got it.
What appeals to you about government and politics?
I don't know. I kind of like seeing how like all of it works and how all of the laws and bills are made and stuff.
Is that because you're thinking about this as a future career, or you just want to know?
Yeah, I want to be, when I grow up, I want to be president.
President of the United States? All right, so what is your path to the presidency? Does it start with the PAGE program?
Yeah.
And then what?
Then I want to be, when I grow up, I want to be a senator, like in the,
U.S. Senate?
Yeah, and then I want to be like president.
Okay, so that is an ambitious goal, and I hope you make it. How do you see this work as a page helping you understand how government works?
Because you get to, like, see, like, you get to observe them, like, how, like, all the things they have to do to make a law and a bill and stuff like that.
What are you most excited about in the next 6 weeks? Is there one thing that you really hope you get a chance to see?
I'm excited. On Thursday, they're doing the State of the State, and I'm excited to see that.
Do you know what your assignment is for the State of the State?
Because most people would be watching it, I might be able to just watch it too, but I'm not totally sure.
Well, I am eager to see the State of the State as well, and I'm going to keep an eye out for you and see if I have to see you running around or if you get to watch it. Chip, thank you very much, and congratulations on being a page.
Thank you.
That's Chip Jenning, an eighth grader from Stowe, one of about 30 pages in the PAGE program. They spend about 6 weeks here in the State House doing whatever is needed, running back and forth, and I'm so impressed that they know all 180 lawmakers within just a couple of weeks. Senator Dick McCormick represents Windsor County, Londonderry, and Mount Holly. He says perennial issues like taxes and the economy are on his agenda, as are school consolidation, the opioid crisis, even reintroducing civics into the high school curriculum. But affordability is his central focus.
We do have an affordability problem in this state, and obviously the one way to get at that, well, I don't know if it's obvious to everyone, but it's obvious to some of us, is that if people had more money in their pockets, they'd have more to spend, and that would jazz up the economy. But if nothing else, to me, there's a moral issue. A day's work deserves a day's pay. And many of the people who oppose raising the minimum wage still give lip service to the dignity of labor and the respect for hard work. Well, then, you know, if a society says we respect hard work, then the society ought to make sure that the money is where our mouths are. Similarly, family leave. We've got to make the workplace a place where parents can work, seeing as how it's the rare case now where one person is able to support a whole family. Usually, typically, couples, both members of a couple work. And we have a lot of single-parent households. And I suppose they always have the option of just going on state aid, but they want to work and be independent and pull their weight and serve their kids' interests. Well, then we ought to make that something that people actually can do.
All right, so finding a way for working families to move forward and find success and feel financially stable is a priority of Senator Dick McCormick, as it is for most people who are working in the House and Senate. But it's not easy to be a working parent in a two-working parent household when you are a senator either. Senator Ruth Hardy is an Addison County Democrat, and we spoke with her last year with her whole family here for opening day as she became a new lawmaker, and she's back with us now. Senator Hardy, nice to talk with you.
Nice to talk to you too, Jean.
I don't see your family roaming around, not here this year.
They are not here this year. It's a whole new year, and it's kind of old hat, I guess.
Is it old hat? I mean, do you feel sort of like, I know my way around now?
Well, I'm still really excited to be here. It's still really fun. It doesn't feel old to me yet. It feels a little deja vu-y, but not exactly, old hat so much. But my family didn't come up for the first day like they did last year.
We were just hearing Dick McCormick say, we've got to make things work for families. Yesterday, Bob Kinzel and I were talking about how difficult it is for lawmakers who are young or sort of in that middle age range who maybe have children that they have to care for or need to be able to make enough of a salary to have a household. Is that something that you are struggling with? I mean, we met your family last year, so we know that you're not in that normal 60 years and up demographic here at the State House.
Yeah, it's a huge consideration for me. Can I make the finances work? And make sure that my family is provided for. I'm lucky to have a spouse who has a good job, but we do have our oldest in college now, so we're all thinking about how do we pay for college, and also just balancing, the need to take care of a family and be here. I do have to drive home later this week to go to a school meeting and a concert for one of my kids, so that's all happening at the same time that I'm trying to pass laws that help support families around Vermont.
What laws are you trying to pass this year? What are you working on?
Well, one thing that I'm really excited about, speaking of college tuition, is a bill that would provide tuition support for students who are at CCV, at our community colleges. This is a bill that came out of work that we did last session in the Senate Education Committee on quote-unquote free college. This would be specifically for CCV students which is often where students enter the higher education pipeline in Vermont. So I'm really excited to work on that bill with my colleagues, and I'm really hoping that we can get that one passed this session.
Was there anything that you were disappointed in last year that either didn't pass at all or got delayed that you really want to sort of redouble your efforts on this year?
Yeah, well, of course, paid family leave and minimum wage, I know we'll be getting back to those issues. That was a little bit of a letdown at the end of last session. I'm really hoping that we can do those early. I think there are plans in the works to do so. And then another issue for me that it's a priority is gun violence prevention. That bill was vetoed, and I'm hoping we get back to the conversation on how to make sure that we in Vermont are providing a safe environment when it comes to firearms.
Given that it was vetoed last year, do you take a different approach this year?
I don't know exactly what the approach is going to be yet. I do have a bill that I'll be introducing with Senator Clarkson on the issue, but I think it's a larger conversation with our caucus and both houses as to how we move forward on the issue.
But you think that you can get something passed this year? Or is it just keep the issue in the forefront, make that conversation happen?
I think it's both. I would love to see something pass, and I also want to make sure that we continue to talk about it. It's been an issue in my district and around the state, and I want to make sure that we don't forget it as an important issue.
Well, thank you for talking with us on the second day. I know everybody's right down to work. The main chambers were adjourned by 11, but there's a lot of committee work, there's a lot of conversations happening, and a lot of people that you have to talk to. So I appreciate you talking with us.
My pleasure. Thanks so much, Jane. Take care.
Senator Ruth Hardy is an Addison County Democrat. Jessica Brumstead represents the Chittenden County towns of Shelburne and St. George. She worked on Vermont's new vaping laws that taxed e-cigarettes in line with traditional cigarettes, banned the internet sale of e-cigarettes and tobacco, and raised the age to buy any tobacco product to 21.
As often happens with legislation, we learn as soon as new laws go into effect, the problems still remain. The outbreak of severe pulmonary diseases linked with e-cigarette products this past summer showed all of us that more work is necessary and strong policies are needed to regulate the sale of flavored e-cigarettes. Research has shown that candy-flavored e-cigarettes are hooking youth, plus mint and menthol-flavored tobacco products are making it easier to start and harder to quit. To this end, I plan to introduce legislation that will ban all flavored e-cigarettes and tobacco-related products. Tobacco companies will have one less tool to attract new, young users.
This is Vermont Edition, live from the State House on opening day in the second half of the legislative biennium. While most lawmakers are getting back to work after a year of getting to know the place, getting to know their colleagues, and understanding all of the jargon that is spoken on the House floor, our next guest is just getting started. Yesterday, Governor Phil Scott appointed independent Peter Reed to fill the House seat for the Orange Washington Addison House District, left vacant by the resignation of Ben Jickling in last August. And Representative Reed joins us now. Welcome to the State House and welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thank you very much.
So you have actually been sworn in officially, I believe, right?
Yes, I'm official. I got walked down the aisle and everything.
I wasn't sure, and I was going to ask you that, and then your wife sent me a picture on Instagram, so I have actually seen your swearing-in picture already.
She's my social media advisor.
Why did you want this job?
Well, I just retired from banking, and I've been involved in the community quite a bit, and it popped up and just seemed like I don't know, 9 months of retirement was a little too much, so I had to try something new. But it is a chance to kind of step up in terms of representing the area, and I've gotten a good feel for what some of the issues are, certainly in central Vermont. So hopefully I can make a change.
When you say it popped up, who put it in front of your vision?
Well, it was actually an ad in the paper, because given that Ben was an independent, the normal party process where they would nominate people did not apply, so the governor's office reached out and asked for applications. And so we had 10 people from our area that applied, and I was the lucky one selected.
So you are an independent, and people probably don't know your politics. Do you see that as an advantage or a disadvantage?
Well, it's been an advantage so far, because I don't have to say anything. But I think I'm fairly liberal on the social front, but also with my finance background, I'm pretty fiscally conservative. So in some ways, I'm not that different than the governor. But we'll see issue by issue how things go. And the independent group, I've met them all already, and they work together, but they don't always vote together. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes.
Are you finding people from the parties coming up to you and sort of cozying up and saying, hey, you might want to come and have a drink with us tonight?
Well, I'm sure that will happen. It's been a little bit of a whirlwind this morning, so I've been running around getting my IT passwords and things like that. So I don't think there's been much of an opportunity, but I'm sure that will happen.
So you mentioned that you worked in finance, and you ran a part of the Northfield Savings Bank for the last...
The branch manager for Randolph and then Bethel as well. So that was kind of my capstone job after working in the big corporate world for many years.
Yes, and before that, you worked internationally for a time?
Yes, I worked I was involved a lot in Latin America. I grew up in South America. My dad was an international banker, so I had a chance to live in Venezuela and Ecuador and Puerto Rico.
¿Y hablas español?
Sí, cómo no.
Ah, qué bueno.
I think that will be a good campaigning tool for the 15 Hispanics in my area, probably.
Oh, so you're already running for re-election.
Oh, well, you never know. but it's always fun to be able to use your Spanish here in Vermont. But... I worked in big finance for UBS for many years, and it was an interesting job, and it was very challenging, very stressful, and paid a lot more than working in the State House, but that allowed me to move here and pursue my dreams.
All right, so now that you're here in the State House, you have to hit the ground running, as everybody already has committee assignments. There are bills that were held over from last year that people are ready to get down to work on. What are the priorities for you in this year, 4 or 5 months that you have to work?
Well, I think I'm on the healthcare committee. I've been on the Gifford board for about 4 years, so I've learned a lot about the healthcare issues and policies and challenges here in the state. So that will certainly be a focus. But I know there's some big issues on the table now on family paid leave and minimum wage. So I'll be looking at those carefully. And certainly the climate change issues are ones that loom very large, and I've been spending some time on that. I have a daughter named Greta who is big on the climate change issues and takes her 2-year-old to protest in New York City. So I'm sure she'll be my advisor on some of those issues as well.
And do you have positions established for yourself on those bills that you just mentioned? I mean, climate change, you said, is an issue that you're focused on and that you're going to get some family pressure on. But maybe also things like paid family leave and the minimum wage. Do you take a position yet?
I haven't really taken a position. I think it's a balance between the cost and the benefit at the end of the day. You know, I'd certainly like everybody to be making more money and be able to take leave, but there's also the financial challenges in the state of trying to balance the budget. So I'll be weighing those, but I haven't made up my mind on anything yet.
Well, you have a little bit of time, I guess.
That's right. I have a free pass for the first day.
Peter Reed, who represents Orange, Washington, and Addison, a newly minted representative. Thank you very much for talking with us, and welcome.
Thank you.
Other lawmakers to hear from as well today and tomorrow who we've asked to send us voice recordings. We sent a note to all 180 lawmakers that we knew about at the time, at any rate, and asked them to tell us what their priorities are for this session or what's been held over that they really want to work on. Representative Scott Campbell from St. Johnsbury sees the prospect of transformation in climate change legislation.
I see the global crisis as a local opportunity. Vermonters spend $2 billion every year on fossil fuels, 80% of which leaves the state and drains from our economy. We can plug the drain and build our economy by redirecting that money towards efficiency and the energy resources of the future. We know we need to transition our economy, both globally and locally. We know it's a huge undertaking. Everything runs on fossil fuels, and it affects everyone, rural households and businesses dependent on cars especially. It's going to take time, so we need to get started. I want to work on restructuring our government to move in the direction we know we have to go. We have energy codes, but no penalty if they aren't followed, and insufficient training for contractors and tradespeople. We have a weatherization program that could serve more lower-income households if it had more funding. We could also set up a moderate income efficiency program. Transportation policy should prioritize the electric vehicle charging network and public transit. Agriculture and forestry policy should encourage carbon sequestration and selling the credits. I think we have to make a virtue out of necessity. Reducing greenhouse gas emissions is important, but most important is we can do that while stimulating our economy, improving our local workforce, and helping those who are most vulnerable to the financial hardship climate change is bringing. It's a big job. We have to get started.
Representative Scott Campbell there, echoing what we've heard from many lawmakers who sent us messages with their priorities for this year, that climate change is likely to be a very big topic of conversation in the legislature this year as we go through the second half of the biennium. People who have to help the legislature do that work are not always recognized by name. They're not probably as prominent by face, but they're incredibly important. Peggy Delaney is supervisor for committee services and serves as a staff member for the Senate Judiciary Committee. And Peggy, I appreciate you being here because, you know, you're not usually front and center in front of the microphones, but here you are today. So thank you and welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And what the heck are committee services and what do you do as supervisor?
Great. So what we do, I like to think of us as the engine that works the Statehouse behind the scenes. We are a staff of 21 session-only committee assistants, and we provide all the day-to-day administrative support that's required for the chair to run the committee in a productive and efficient way possible, in a nonpartisan way.
So what does the actual work entail? What are you doing when you're a staff member who's helping a committee?
There's a lot that goes on before the committee meets, as far as we work with the chairs to set the agenda, and then we contact all the witnesses, we do all the handouts, we make all the copies, that's really what we do, is set the agenda with the chair so that we take care of everything so that when they sit down for example, I'm in Senate Judiciary at 8:30, everything is ready for them to go so they can start doing the important work that they need to do.
You sound like a radio producer.
Kind of.
So what have you been doing in the past few days as we get ready for the second year of the biennium?
Well, we do, like I said, we have 21 session only, so there is turnover because it is only a session only position. So this year we had 9 new committee assistants, and we do extensive training with them that we work. I have a support team that works with me. We work all fall on the training, and then they actually come to training for a week in December, and then they come to orientation, which is when the returning committee assistants come, and we work together for 3 days. To get ready. There's a lot for them to learn. They have to learn the new systems. They have to learn about their committee. So we've basically been preparing for today, the start of the session.
So are you super read in on all of the issues that the Senate Judiciary Committee is likely to tackle, like more read in than actual committee members?
No, I wouldn't say that. I would say this is my 4th year as committee assistant for Senate Judiciary. The first year you're a committee assistant, honestly, you're just trying to get your job done and sort of put your head down. By the 2nd year, you get to learn a little bit more about the issues, and that's actually what I love about the job. I love Senate Judiciary. I love the issues that we tackle in that committee. So I find it all very, very interesting. So I try and pay as much attention as I can, while at the same time I'm getting my agenda ready for next week.
So are you ever, though, compelled or do you have to force yourself not to say your opinion on things when you know so much about the topic?
Not that I know so much about the topic, but I am a very opinionated person, and it is very hard sometimes to not. But we are nonpartisan, and one thing I will tell you as a committee assistant, you know, we'll be taking up a bill, and I think I know exactly how I personally feel about the bill, but then you listen to the testimony, and it's very, you know, in Vermont we do a great job. Senator Sears does an amazing job of hearing both sides of the issues. So by the end of it, sometimes I even change my mind, but it's really important that I keep those opinions to myself.
Even at a dinner party?
in a dinner party, I'll speak my mind, but not when I'm working.
Well, it's so interesting to hear about the work that you do because it is so important to keeping all of the gears in motion in the State House, and I appreciate you taking the time to tell us just a little bit about it.
Thank you. We are very proud of the work that we do, so I appreciate the opportunity to tell you about it.
That's Peggy Delaney, Supervisor for Committee Services and also Staff Assistant for the Senate Judiciary Committee. And let's turn to one other live guest here as we look at what's happening in the State House today. And this is somebody who knows a lot from many different angles of the State House. Patty Comline is a lobbyist and owner of Comline Consulting. But before she became a lobbyist, she was a Republican representative for the Bennington-Rutland area for 12 years. She also served as House Minority Leader. And she's with us now. Patty, nice to talk with you again.
Nice to talk with you, too.
In a kind of a different role.
Yeah, I'd also like to add that we're now with Downs Rockland Martin.
That's right. So, I heard that. So are you merged?
Yes.
Okay, so what's the new title?
Downs Rockland Martin.
And so what are you actually working on this year? What are you here for today?
For today, just a general overview for all of our clients. We have a lot of clients now, so I'm excited about that. I'm excited about the diversity of the work that we're doing, and it's exciting.
So in terms of how you figure out what issues you're going to work on, you know, there are different kinds of lobbyists and different kinds of organizations, and some people say, you know, this is the issue that I work on, and I'm going to work on only solar. In your role and with your company, do you take on clients and then you figure out, okay, so this is the priority of the client and here's what I need to do for them? Or are you saying, look, these are the issues that I can tackle and only those issues?
Sometimes. Other times I'll find an issue that I'm particularly interested in and then I'll go and seek out a client on that issue. Not dissimilar from being a legislator. As a minority legislator, I was lobbying all the time anyway. So when I first came in, I was really excited, and as new people, and you have great ideas and not necessarily early recognizing the unintended consequences. And I was really impressed with lobbyists here, and that's a bipartisan attitude because we don't have staff as legislators. And so they're really the eyes and ears for the people that are out there that would be affected by legislation. So the type of lobbying I really like to do is bringing people in. I represent one client, home builders, and there's a lot of ideas on home building. And so we actually get the home builders in and work with legislators in crafting, you know, tweaking their ideas and their drafts into ways that actually work for real people out in the field. And they can't be here. You know, there's a lot of people, grocers can't be here and bankers can't be here. So lobbyists they nationally have a really bad reputation, but in this building, I think you'd be hard put to find anybody that says, you know, that feels like they're not a help to people in here.
Is the home building and construction issue one that you sought out, or can you give me an example of that?
One that I sought out?
Yeah.
Yes. With regard to gun reform, I represent Giffords with Gabrielle Giffords organization. And so that's one that a couple of years ago I actively sought out working on that issue. Worked first with Clay Lasher Summers from Gun Sense Vermont. And in talking to her, she was able to help me connect with Giffords. And that's one that we really sought out, and was excited about that.
So, you know, that's not necessarily an issue. Gun regulation and gun reform is not an issue that's perfectly well aligned with the National Republican Party. And, you know, when you think about your role now as a lobbyist, does your former legislative association, your party association, help you, hinder you? I mean, how do you sort of deal with that?
I was a Phil Scott Republican, you know, so it really is not relevant in the role that I play now with the party.
Do you feel like knowing the State House well and knowing many of the lawmakers is an advantage as a lobbyist?
It was advantage in that it was like I was lobbying here for 15 years. You know, it didn't give me any inside advantage, but the fact that I'm friendly with people and have relationships with people, the same as I would have had I been a lobbyist all this time. But I know the best intentions of the people that are here, and it's just an honor to work here.
Do you think lawmakers should be able to become lobbyists and then go back to lawmaking and back and forth, or do you see impediments to that?
I don't see where I had any kind of advantage, so I would say I don't see a problem in doing one or the other, going back and forth.
Well, I'm sure we'll see you around the State House more in your role as lobbyist and owner of Comline Consulting, working with Downs Rackland Martin this year on some issues important to many people in the State House. Patty Comline, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.